I got something here. I want to see if you know what this is.
A cube.
A cube. That's right.
Yeah, I like that.
Hello and welcome from deep inside Jolly Roger's studio. This is the Q Filmcast. And whether you're with us online, worldwide, or perhaps nationwide on one of our affiliate stations, thanks as always for tuning in. If you don't yet know, or perhaps you've stumbled upon us by chance, we are the show which brings to you our review of a particular film. Currently streaming on Netflix Instant, we gather here each week at Jolly Roger Studio, where we go around the table to tell you what we thought. That and our top three list, which is always inspired by the movie in question. And the movie in question this week, what is it? It is the 1974
Coppola.
You understand Gerald, how
it was right. Gerald Ford back then, wasn't it?
You can understand how that could happen,
yeah,
right?
Yeah, easy.
My apologies.
I say Ford all the time.
It's 1974 Francis Ford Coppola.
Right.
His paranoid thriller, The Conversation, starring Gene Hackman, John Cazale, Alan Garfield, Frederick Forrest, and Shirley. No, we're talking about Cindy Williams.
And you forgot Harrison Ford and Robert Duvall, for crying out loud.
Yeah, thank you, Max. Right. Thank you. Jeez, why is that not on my notes?
Oh, Terry Garr. Right.
Well, if you've seen this film, keep listening. See if you agree or disagree with our take on it. Or if not, even better, you just keep listening to see if it's something you may want to cue up yourself. So I am Michael, along with James Hardsub Savage.
What's up, Maestro?
Oh, I'm doing okay, Savage.
Yeah?
I'm doing all right. I had a pretty good week.
All right.
Yeah, I did. You know, I didn't have to run to Lowe's or Home Depot to do massive repairs in my living room. Mm-hmm. No one went in there and tore up all my drywall or my flooring.
Right.
You didn't miss a note on saxophone.
Didn't miss a note on saxophone. I did have to, however, bust the pen and throw it at someone. Had to break a pen. I was harassed by a mime. But it was a pretty good week because at no time did I walk into my bathroom and see a bunch of blood in my toilet.
Oh, that's always good.
So that's why my week was so bad.
That's why it's so bad. And to your left, Savage, let's go there. That's Matthew St. Hoodie.
Shh.
What? Oh, jeez.
I think we're being recorded, guys.
I don't know what you're talking about.
Pretty sure we're being recorded. Everybody.
And
you are being recorded.
Yeah, I'm pretty sure.
You think so? Rewind that like 15 more times. I want to hear it.
Right, we should lower the cone of silence.
We might do something. As for the people that have seen the film, the conversation that we're going to talk about.
Shh.
Stop. How about to your left there, Hoodster? Let's go there. Let's go over to Max Gumbo Johnson.
Hello.
Yeah.
Hello. How's it going?
I'm doing okay.
Good. Yeah. So I heard.
You didn't see did you have as good a week as I did?
It wasn't terrible. It's okay.
Yeah. Well, you know,
it'll be better.
It'll be better eventually.
Yeah.
Yes. Okay. Well, it's good to have you here, man.
Thank you.
Always so good to see you.
I know.
God. Want your opinion on films. Want to know what you think about movies.
You're right. That's what I'm here for.
And you always deliver.
That's what we're here for.
Who else is in this room? Oh, that's the producer.
Way over there.
Yeah, that's about as much sense as he makes when you can actually hear him do it. Right.
I actually prefer that.
Right. No, he is our lovely producer. The greatest producer in the history of this Q Filmcast. That's Adam the Bomb Rogers.
Does anybody else hear that ticking?
All right, let's get into the movie, guys. The Conversation, 1974, directed by Francis Ford Coppola. I hadn't
nominated
seen it.
For Best Picture or something?
Mm-hmm. Interesting fact, before we get into the did you know? Yeah. That this is the only time that a director had two Best Picture nominations in the same year.
Whoa.
It was
this. This and Godfather 2.
Yeah, this lost out. I mean,
he lost to himself.
How do you think he felt about that? Was he slightly upset? Happy?
Yeah, probably. I
bet he was upset because it's like his favorite movie.
Okay, yeah. Yeah, I bet you was.
He's like, oh man, I was really hoping to take down Godfather 2. Conversation.
That director is a real
Yeah, well listen, let's get into it. There's a lot to say, that's for sure. Before we get going, let's talk about how to keep up with us, like Facebook, Twitter, iTunes, Google Plus, Max.
Yeah,
YouTube heard of that. Channel. But better yet, you always want to go to our site, theqfilmcast.net. Qfilmcast.net. You go there, you can leave your review of this film. Tell us what you think of this. All right, so let's get into it. I've been wanting to say this forever. You guys ready to queue up The Conversation?
Oh. No, wah, wah. That's good.
I say that every week, but this week it's beautiful.
It's apropos.
This was selected by Max Gumbo Johnson.
It was indeed.
And tell us why it was indeed selected by Max Gumbo Johnson.
Because I love this movie, and nobody else had seen it except me. I can't believe none of y'all had
Adam
seen
saw it.
It. Well,
seen
he
it.
Doesn't
no
count.
No one else had seen it.
I didn't know you'd seen it. But yeah, it's a great movie. I love this movie, so I wanted everybody to watch
well,
it.
You
tell
raised,
me what they thought of it.
You raised the bar, so you're going to have to wait and see if you if that bar was there for me, okay? Because you talked this film up.
Oh, wow. Okay. Heaven forbid Michael didn't like
no,
it.
No. I
he may have his dancing shoes on.
I might.
People who liked this film also liked The Tenet, Barton Fink, Blow Up, The Manchurian Candidate, and Jacob's Ladder. As they all do, this film inspired a top three list. You know mm-hmm. what this inspired, Hoodie?
Yep.
Why don't you say it? This film inspired our top three what? At the end of this?
Broken, pulled up floorboards.
That's the currency for crying out loud.
Oh, my bad.
I'll do my job.
I'm so focused because I can never remember the currency, and I always feel like I'm going to be put on the spot.
Top three paranoid movie characters.
Yeah.
Oh, that sounds way better.
Yeah.
I don't know how many broken up floorboards I can name.
God, that would have been a stretch.
There's oak and pine.
So, that's it. Let's do this. Written and directed by Francis Ford Coppola. The film stars, as we discussed before, Gene Hackman, John Cazale, Alan Garfield. You know, he was in this film and Beverly Hills Cop 2. But it stars Shirley, too, Laverne and Shirley.
Mm-hmm. Which, Cindy Williams.
Yeah, Cindy Williams. It's kind of like Chloe from 24. It's Chloe.
No, that's Marilyn Raskin.
Uh-huh. Ratings and what the critics thought, then we'll get into what we thought. IMDb, Savage, what do you think IMDb gave 1974?
See if he gets it right this week.
74. Conversation.
74.
Oh, that's nice. I like the way you tried to make that work. 8.0.
Okay.
So IMDb is the point system.
The point, yeah. You percentage.
IMDb.
Remember, if you had a Rotten Tomato, what percentage would you throw in the trash?
Oh, so that makes perfect sense.
There you go.
So got what it. Percentage do you think the critics gave this on Rotten Tomatoes?
92.
Man, you're close. It's 98% fresh.
Jeez.
What?
Yeah, I went way high on that, too.
Fresh.
What?
I never thought it would hit 98.
Whoa.
What about the users, Max?
87.
90.
Oh, I wasn't far off.
So... All right, yeah, I'll get into it. Let's talk about what this film is, a little brief synopsis, then we'll take a trailer. 1974's The Conversation, made between The Godfather, 1972, and The Godfather Part II, 1974. The Conversation was a return to small-scale art films for Francis Ford Coppola. It tells the story of sound surveillance expert Harry Call, who's hired to track a young couple, taping their conversation as they walk through San Francisco's crowded Union Square. Knowing full well how technology can invade privacy, Harry obsessively keeps to himself, separating business from his personal life, even refusing to discuss what he does or where he lives with his girlfriend. Harry's work starts to trouble him, however, as he comes to believe that the conversation he's just pieced together reveals a plot by the mysterious corporate director. After he allows himself to be seduced by a call girl, who then steals the tapes, Harry is all the more convinced that a killing will occur, and he can no longer separate his job from his conscience. The Godfather Part II and The Conversation earned Coppola a rare pair of Oscar nominations for Best Picture in the same year, as we talked about, as well as two nominations for Best Screenplay. Godfather II won both. Praised by critics, The Conversation was not a popular hit, but has since become seen as one of the artistic high points of the decade, as well as Coppola's career. Its atmosphere of paranoia and suspension combined with its obsessive loner anti-hero made it prototypical of the darker American art movies of the early 70s. It did do financially well, though, they say here, making $4,420,000 of its domestic gross on a $1.5 million budget. So there you go.
It's not bad. Too bad.
So yeah. I guess you can call it a success in a lot of ways, right?
Yeah. No Godfather 2. Yeah.
So let's listen to a piece of the conversation here. We'll come back in just a minute and tell you what we thought as well, and we'll be back in just a few.
This is a world of hidden mics and two-way mirrors, a world where nothing is private. Harry Call is an expert. The best there is.
What about me?
He can bug anybody, anytime, anywhere. They're not people to him. Just voices.
Three people were murdered, that's all.
He doesn't know them, and they don't know him. Be careful, Harry. You're just supposed to listen. Not look. Not feel. Not care.
How'd you get this phone number?
Don't get involved in this, Mr. Cole. These tapes are dangerous.
Come on, Harry. Show and tell. How'd you do it?
Why are you asking me all these questions?
Gene Hackman, is Harry Call in The Conversation.
So there it is, a piece of the 1974 film that we're talking about, The Conversation, directed by Francis Ford Coppola. Savage, did you know that Gene Hackman later plays a former NSA agent who was a surveillance expert in Enemy of the State, 1988?
I did know that.
Did not see the film.
I did.
Did you like it?
Big Willie style.
Big Willie style.
Yeah.
Hoodie.
Hey.
This film was originally, what? A second here. Originally envisioned as a horror movie with Marlon Brando. Where's the horror?
I think that was Apocalypse Now.
Yeah, maybe I grabbed the wrong trivia.
No, that was in there.
Okay, okay.
I read it too.
Did you know Gene Hackman was a fit, good-looking, relatively young man when Coppola cast him as Harry Call in order to personify Harry's weary, aging, and unhappy existence? Hackman grew a pathetic-looking mustache, wore ill-fitting glasses, and had a wardrobe picked out that was at least 10 years to date. Adam, is that why you do that? Oh.
I really like Gene Hackman.
Oh, okay.
All he needed to do was get that raincoat.
Yeah, the semi-plastic raincoat. God.
See-through raincoat. Yeah. What?
And that's outerwear. Was that quality outerwear?
Not quality. No.
No.
Maybe for its day.
And you would know. Did you know that Coppola had written the outline in 1966, is when this thing was actually written, couldn't get it financed until The Godfather became a success?
Okay.
Did you know that the part of Martin Stett, played by Harrison Ford, was originally intended to be a minor cameo, but Ford's performance convinced him to make the character an integral part of the movie? Check this out. Max, did you call this number? Harry Call's phone number is 415-863-1944.
I didn't call it.
Did you really call it?
Yeah, it's disconnected.
Did you know that Francis Ford Coppola says this is his favorite of all of his movies?
Oh, I did know that.
Did you know that Gene Hackman says this is the favorite of all of his movies?
Really?
I didn't know that.
Really?
Interesting, huh?
When did they ask him that?
I wonder if they get
right
to
after they made the movie.
Yeah, exactly.
I don't know when they asked it. Let's get into currency, though, before we rate the film. We don't use stars or thumbs up here. Why is that, Max?
Because it's stupid.
It's stupid. It's dumb. We let the film tell us what we're going to do, and this film certainly did that. I think, Hoodie, you let the cat out of the bag.
I think so.
We're talking about torn up floorboards. So let's get into it here, and we're going to go over to the man that queued up the film, 1974, The Conversation, and let's have a conversation about it, Max Gumbo Johnson.
So
What do you give this film?
10 torn-up floorboards.
Whoa. All the way up there, huh?
Wow.
10. This is a masterpiece. This is one of the greatest films of the 70s, hands down.
That's a bold statement.
And, yep.
Yeah. If Gene Hackman was here, he'd say yeah.
And Francis Ford Coppola would agree with me, too.
Well, we have Hackman's number. Maybe we should call him.
Right?
Oh, try 10.
Nah, it was disconnected.
Disconnected.
Okay,
yeah,
so
10.
You champion the film.
Definitely gets a 10. This is hands down a masterpiece.
It's almost like as time goes by, this becomes more into that, but it becomes part of that conversation.
Well, yeah. I mean, yeah. I think it was relevant then. People didn't realize how relevant it was. And with everything that's gone on in the past
Especially
couple years.
Watergate about that point.
Well, yeah, I think that was a big part of it. I mean, he's sitting there in the hotel and he turns the TV on and they're talking about Watergate.
Yeah.
Which, you know, okay, wow, this guy was ahead of his time. Not that he was ahead of his time, but something came to the forefront that really made this thing relevant. I think with everything that's going on now, it's still relevant.
Yeah.
I think it'll always
that.
Be relevant as far as that goes.
Let's go directly in order here.
Okay.
He looks like he's ready to jump into this thing. I want to get him out of the gate quick. And we're talking about our producer. 1 to 10 floorboards. He gave it a 10. Where are you going, producer?
Half that. 5.
Okay. Didn't exactly despise the film.
No, didn't despise it, but I didn't care for the beginning of it.
Really?
Yep.
Really? It's a long setup.
Yep. Too long of a setup.
Yeah.
Mm-mm. That might be part of the charm, but it's certainly not charming to you.
Nope.
So 5. We have a 10.
Nope.
We have a 10 from Gumbo, 5 from the producer. Going over to Matthew St. Hoodie, the patron saint of clear plastic outerwear.
I'm between a 7 and 8. I'm going to go with 7 now.
Okay.
Sorry, Max. I feel bad.
That's okay.
That's not a bad score.
Better than a 5.
Yeah. You're going to tell us why you couldn't go up a little bit, but obviously there's some things that were intriguing.
It is intriguing. I just found myself kind of wandering. I can. I like slow movies. It was just a little bit... I don't want to say too slow, but it was too slow.
Okay.
Right.
I don't want to say it, but I am saying it.
It's a big setup, man. No doubt about it. I'm setting up James Hartsup Savage for his response. 1 to 10, torn up floorboards.
It's no secret that the 70s movies don't strike me very well. Yeah. There's some real problems with this film. There's a lot of right with the film, too, and there's some good players in it. So I'll go with Adam. I'll go with a 5.
Wow. Okay. 2 5s, a 7. Mm. A 10?
I'm going to keep my mouth shut.
I doubt it.
No, he can't keep it.
For now, I will.
so it leaves it to me to round this sucker out. I couldn't wait to see this film. Watched it three times. This is as close to a masterpiece as I've seen. I loved this film. And every time I watched it, I loved it more. I'm going to go in between a 9 and a 10, teetering 10. There's a couple things I want answered for me. If you can answer it, I'll go 10.
I'll get you there, buddy.
Because this was mesmerizing to me. You know, you say the thing about 70s turning off. Yeah. I think I've told you this. There's something about that time frame grabs me. This may be the best of the bunch. I didn't immediately jump up and rip off my shirt and do the dance on my coffee table like right, I did right. with Dr. Strangelove.
Right.
But I tell you what, I turned right around and watched this thing doubled up. Watched it again. I love this movie.
Good on you.
So there
it takes,
you go.
It's one of those movies that works better on multiple viewings.
Yeah, it does. It really does. It really, really does. But
I only watch it the once.
That kind of hurt me, actually.
What?
Well, I mean, you know the big part, the he would kill us if he had a chance, that thing.
Mm-hmm.
I was listening for the how he said it at the beginning, watching it a second time. Mm-hmm. No. It's completely different.
Well,
we'll get into it.
Yeah, we can get into that. We can get into that. I'll tell you what, why don't we do that real quick? We'll come back and get into why we rated this film. Take a quick break. Listen to a piece of the conversation, set up the movie just a bit. 1974. I did it again. 1974, Francis Ford Coppola's The Conversation.
Oh, Miss Evangelista? Yes, this is Harry Call from upstairs. But what I wanted to talk to you about was, how did you put it in the apartment?
Uh-huh, right.
Well, what about the alarm?
Oh, you did.
I thought I had the only key. See, I would be perfectly happy to have all my personal things burned up in a fire because I don't have anything personal.
No, nothing personal except my keys, you see. Miss Evangelista, as of today, my mail will go to a post office box with a combination on it and no keys. Goodbye.
The Conversation, 1974. There's a piece of that. Now let's get into what we thought. We told you our ratings. Floorboards, how many we ripped up. We're all heading to Home Depot.
Just what was the total on that? Do we get that?
36.
36. Okay.
Not too shabby.
Not too bad.
No. Expected higher.
I did.
With two tens, I expected higher.
I'm 9.
Almost.
Don't get
almost,
me there yet.
Almost.
A 10 for me is an emotional gut feeling.
Well, he's given less tens than anybody.
You did the dance.
I have. I've only given two tens. That's the only second 10
have you
given,
Adam?
I can't remember.
Good on you.
Here's my thing. I do the dance at 9. I do the dance with my shirt ripped off at 10. Okay? Right. That's where I'm at. I'm doing the dance.
You do the deadly prayer.
Yeah, we'll see if I get shirtless. We'll see if I get shirtless for you, Max. God, I hope. I don't know what that was. Max, you talk about it. You went way up on this thing. One of your favorite films, definitely from that era. So talk about it. What do you want to champion about this film?
The one thing I really, really liked about this was one of the things that I guess some people complain about, that it was slow and that the buildup was too slow and the buildup was too long. That's one of the things that I liked about it so much, because you see these two people and you can't really understand what they're saying. And you really don't know what's going on at the beginning, and it slowly progresses at a consistent rate. You find out more about the characters that he's trying to get the conversation from, and at the same time you learn more about Harry Call as the movie goes on, and his little group of friends that he's dealing with, and then you get to learn some of his backstory when he goes to that convention and meets that total jerk, and it all just builds slowly until you really know everything you need to know about these characters, and it culminates in just that nightmare scenario where he goes to the hotel.
Yeah.
And it's devastating at the end. To me, anyway. And the other aspect I liked about it is a lot of people argue, you know, the paranoia aspect. And a lot of people call this a paranoid thriller. I think you called it that. I don't find this to be a paranoid thriller. I think it's more reflective of the time that it was made than most of the films we've watched on here. And it is incredibly reflective of the time. It's totally a time capsule film, but it's, like I said earlier, it's still relevant today. Everything was just great about this movie. Everybody's performance was great. All the little clues and ticks they gave away that you didn't realize until the end, and how they played into the whole situation and how everything worked and came together like the little puzzle that it did. And then that shock at the end, that twist.
Yeah.
And the way you mentioned you went back and watched it, and he said, he'd kill us if he had the chance. Mm. They actually recorded that like 20 different times.
I'm sure they did.
So that it sounded different every time, which played into the Harry Call character and his paranoia, because every time he listened to it, he heard it a little bit of a different way.
Yeah.
And I picked up on that when I was watching. I said, that sounds a little different than the first time they played it. And then they played it again. I said, that doesn't sound the same. Even when he would rewind it, that scene where he's going back and forth trying to sync the recordings up, it changes within that single scene itself.
Yeah.
This is a master filmmaker working at his highest potential, as far as I'm concerned.
Yeah, and it's unapologetic, too. It's like, okay, we're going to be very methodical and meticulous with this film.
It totally is that.
And it works well with the content and the characters. And they didn't back off of that. It would have been easy to say, okay, it's getting a little long, guys. No, let's keep going. This is the kind of film we're going to make. So there was never any second guessing of it. It was just, this is what we're going to do. And it held together because we were so committed to it.
Yeah.
To making it so long and so, thought out, like you say, yeah, put together like that. Yeah, well, let's get into some scenes here in just a bit. We'll really break some of these down. I want to ask the producer, but I think you should do it as a mime. I think you should tell us as a mime. Anything you want to add before we go over to Hoodie? Or you want to just wait for scenes?
He's trapped in his box.
He's trapped in his box. He's in his little producer box.
Right.
He brought it up that this was a time capsule piece. I actually thought it was this was relevant to any time, any period. You know, it could be back in like the Cold War. It could be nowadays. It could be way back in
it was
early
during the Cold War.
Yeah, I know. Early 1940s. It could be any of this time.
I said it was still relevant.
Yeah. The one thing I did not like about this movie was that the buildup, it was just way too long. It took too long to get there. It was just an hour and 15 minutes before anything really started happening.
No.
It felt that way.
Did something happen?
Yeah.
You know, I think it's easy to say that because nothing happened, that this was the slow part of the film. That stuff was so intriguing.
But it was a good setup. It just took too long to get there.
I got you, man. All right. Well, we'll talk about some of these things that annoyed you. And
the ending,
else.
Brilliant. It's all I can say. The twist. Yeah. But then there's something else that I'll get into my.
When we get into scenes, bookmark that, dog ear that thing. I'll get back to you. You can tell me what you're thinking of right now. Hoodie, let's just go round table, man. You gave this a 7.
7.
So you liked it more than you despised it.
I didn't despise it at all. I thought it was a great movie. I think I went in with really high expectations.
Yeah.
Is that my fault?
Yeah.
I'm sorry.
But from the opening shot, I thought that was fantastic. Mm. I had no idea what I was watching, and the audio going in and out. You know, I was the guy who was like smacking his TV, like, what's going on with this thing? what is happening with my TV?
Yeah, I did, actually. I thought, is there something wrong with my TV?
I was like, I need to reload this movie. It didn't load right. But then I was like, oh, I'm an idiot. What do you do? Coppola, a lot of gorgeous shots, gorgeous use of light all through the movie. The sound was the highlight of the thing. The tape, I thought, was fantastic. Even that one conversation, hearing it over and over again, I never really got sick of it. It was interesting every time.
Mm-hmm.
I didn't know that they did it a bunch of different times. Would you say 20 different times or something?
I don't know. I just made up a number. But I know they recorded that line over and over and over and played it different almost every time.
I'm with you. I kind of caught that it was a little bit different every time. And I kind of caught that was kind of leading, Harry, into a little bit of madness, which I really liked. And the ending just kind of highlighted that even more. Really liked it.
Yeah,
I'm really not a fan of saxophone music, I guess.
You're a clarinet guy.
I'm a clarinet guy.
Especially when he's obviously not playing it, right?
Oh, it was bad.
Yeah. Well, this is also coming from the same guy who had all the sax, top three sax solos.
Yeah, that's true.
Well, that's true. Those were 80s, though.
None of them were in the conversation.
Right.
Without a doubt, it's interesting filmmaking. I mean, you say the opening shot. That is one of the most grabbing shots because you're like, okay, where are they taking me? You feel like you're tethered to a balloon and they're pulling you down.
Yeah. Right.
It's
not
fascinating.
So, it's not so much the shot. I think the shot on its own isn't that strong a shot. It's interesting.
Yes.
But you couple that shot with the sound that's going on and it becomes just a whole other animal. And that's what makes it so strong.
Yeah. Coppola knew what he was doing here.
Really? I mean, he's Coppola.
He's Coppola. But I thought
he's done it a couple times.
Yeah, and you can tell this guy knows what he's doing. And I completely agree. It's a masterwork. It just didn't strike a chord with me.
Okay.
So what do you do? And I tried watching it again, and that just kind of, I was like, Same thing. I was in the same boat. I liked it better the second time. And I think that as, I live with this movie for a little while longer, I'll like it more and more and more.
You'll probably think about it.
I absolutely will. And like I said, the pace was just a little bit too slow.
Yeah.
And the only thing that I really, I like slow paced movies. The part that I really didn't like was, the party at his studio or whatever it was.
Oh, his workshop.
Yeah,
that's
what I thought kind of just dragged. So when I say slow, it wasn't the whole movie. It was really specifically that.
You thought that interrupted the flow of the film?
It just didn't it just didn't make any sense. Riding a scooter, where'd the scooter come from? Right. And then I was like, what?
Big shot.
It really did.
I have a take on that and why that might have been thrown in there purposefully.
Right. But, you know, what Adam's saying as far as the nothing happens in the hour 15, I don't buy that. There was a lot going on. And I really enjoy slow movies, but maybe it wasn't the pace of the movie, but that one, like you said, interrupted it a little bit. Yeah.
Well, let's go over to Heart Sub Savage.
Yeah.
You went 5, didn't really care for it.
There's some real problems with this film. There's some real problems with the narrative. There's some real problems with the storytelling.
Are you going to say, why didn't they just poison him?
No. I mean, but there's a lot right. I mean, you've got some real powerhouse actors. You've got, obviously, Coppola. He's no slouch. He knows what he's doing. That opening shot is a neat shot, and I think you're right, Hoodie. You nailed it. With it coupled with the audio is what makes it so interesting. And I was on board from that opening shot, but then it just, Max, when you say it's very reflective of the times, you know, another way to say that is it's very dated and it feels very dated.
No, that's two different things.
No, anytime you focus on technology of a time, you automatically date yourself.
I've said that before.
You automatically date yourself, and you know, that's fine. It's
that was one of the things I liked about it.
That's one of the things I liked about it too.
It's neat in a curious way, but this guy, I mean, and for one, the coat, every time I saw that coat.
That was a recurring theme throughout the whole movie.
The coat? Noticed.
Well, not so much the coat.
The translucence.
The translucence. He's always behind something you could kind of see through.
God, I like that.
That's
I like
what
the way
I was
going to
say.
I'm sorry.
I didn't
you
pick up
say
on
it?
That, but
you
I like
say
it.
Nah, forget it.
And I don't mind character piece films because this is what this is. This is a character piece about Henry Call. The entire film is from his perspective. The entire film. It's not really interested in developing any of the other characters other than how they interact or intersect with Harry Call and what he perceives them to be. There's never any development of any of the other characters other than what he perceives them to be and what he is exposed to, because it's his story, essentially. Every shot in this is his perspective, except the end, and that completely kicked me out of the end. But when you have a character who's so paranoid and who's so reluctant to say anything about himself, you're left as a viewer, as an audience member, to draw your own conclusions about this character. And in that two-dimensionality, you're left with cliches because you're not getting any information other than this guy's closed off. He's shut off. And he's terrible at his job. Well, I take that back. He's not terrible at his job. He's a very good surveillance technician. He's a terrible spy. He's an absolute
it's
terrible,
because
he's at a
moral crossroads that's causing him to.
I think your point is that he's at a convention. Oh, hey, Harry Call, the greatest super spy in the country.
Well, his girlfriend.
They said the same thing about James Bond.
Right.
Yeah.
His girlfriend watched him for an hour watch her without him knowing it.
His what?
Yeah, the girlfriend. He goes, Terry Gar. She's like, I watched you for an hour watch me, and you didn't even know it. Okay, so you didn't even know she's watching?
Well, he could have been so close. The landlord, he didn't want to admit.
The landlord breaks into his apartment. The ADT alarm sets his birthday bottle booze. It's like, okay.
Yeah.
The guy plants a bug on him. He didn't know it.
Okay, but he's at a point where he's arrived at this reputation. He's arrived at this place in life where he's this guy.
Says you.
That's what everybody's telling him. And I think that adds to that idea that, okay, maybe he just arrived here on the back of something that he didn't really, that he arrived here not on his own reconnaissance. He just kind of was a victim of things that happened in his life that brought him to this point.
Well, they bring that up.
You know what I'm saying?
Well, and then he brings a party to his workshop. Somebody's so paranoid, he's going to bring the competition to his workshop.
Yeah, I had a problem with that too.
Okay.
And then with the microphone, he's like, oh, let me show you this job I'm going to do right
here.
No. Well,
that's not right, though.
No, the Cazell says, let me show you this job, and then he's immediately proud of how he pulled off the job.
Yeah.
Well, but then he shows him this microphone, the rifle microphone or whatever it was.
Mm-hmm. Yeah.
And he's look at this. I said, oh, what's that? You know, the competition guy's like, oh, what's that? And he says, oh, let me put it back behind the cage. They just left the convention of surveillance equipment.
What's your point?
Yeah, I don't understand what the point is.
That wasn't there.
No, he made it.
No, it's he didn't.
Yes, he did.
He told him the model number of the thing.
No, he said he made it.
He said the model number of the microphone.
Myself.
He said, I used this microphone with this thing and this thing. He built that.
He made all of his stuff. It was pretty obvious.
Well, now, and I do remember where he says, I make all my own equipment at the convention.
He pieced it together.
Well, I'll give you that. But he was terrible at his job. I mean, he was a good surveillance guy. But he was a bad spy.
He's not a spy. He's a surveillance guy.
Well,
and he works on audio. That's what his job is.
Anyway, that bothered me. The dream sequence was really, really good.
I didn't like the dream sequence.
I liked it. I thought it was neat.
I thought from the story it was great because it told his backstory as a child and how he has this internal
Turmoil.
Well, thank you very much. It's internal turmoil.
But it also freed up the perspective. The audio stuff with the actual conversation through the repeating audio stuff through the conversation was really neat. I really liked how that was done. But when it turned to that ending, that kicked me right out. When we talk about scenes, I'll tell you why.
Okay, well, let's get into scenes here.
That kicked me out. So.
Okay, yeah. Well, I mean, there's a lot going on in this film. There's a much happening, that's for sure. I'll tell you why I liked it. I liked it because it's consistently one step ahead of me. This film was consistently smarter than me. And I like that. I like to be in the back seat sometimes, having someone take me somewhere. And when you're that, you become something you can look up to. I look up to this film for those reasons. It's just a smart film. Brilliant piece of cinema, if you ask me. That's what I'm going to say.
I agree.
And the fact that it's hard set as a period piece, one that's incredibly interesting, by the way, the early 70s, all that, makes it a fascinating watch. I would say it adds an element of then and now. And this film is very prevalent, especially with the technology, like you talked about. Its role in society, what we should do, what we shouldn't do with it, right? These are the same questions that you ask today. Mm-hmm. And so the backdrop of this story is fascinating, and I actually think that it's a film that may even be more entertaining for a 2014 audience than it was for a 1974 audience. I kept thinking, well, they kind of missed out on something. You know, they didn't get the enjoyment of seeing it as a time capsule. And I actually think we get a more intriguing movie than the initial audience. I think that might be why it becomes more revered as time goes on. You know what I'm talking about?
I absolutely do.
I don't agree with that, but I understand what you're saying. When the 74 audience is watching it, they're not watching it here and now. They're watching it as technology that could be, that may be, what's going to happen. We're looking back at this, and I think that's even more fascinating because then you can play, okay, how have we gone from this point? Where are we now when we start here? So that becomes very intriguing. I actually like that, and I think there are certain movies that actually date very well. This is one of them. Then there's the story. The peek into Harry's soul, his psyche, where we see a guy that truly lives a paranoid existence. Not because someone's watching him, but because he no longer knows what road he's on. A moral compass that has no idea where to point. That's this guy's deal. You know what I'm talking about? The film is masterful at bringing that paranoia to you. It continually builds these questions in your mind, gives you the answers at just the right time. And I'm talking about methodically. The pages turn slowly and masterfully. In the end, I'm left with the fact that every new scene with Harry has consequence and weight, too, because something was revealed in the one before it. That's where it becomes a great story. It's brilliant like that. One example is the convention scene. When Harry ends up there, he doesn't just end up there. We know when he goes in. This is a place of unbelievable stress and paranoia to him. So when you walk into there, you're like, okay, how is he going to handle this? He just left the priest where he's like, he's on the edge. He doesn't know if his past is catching up to him. He doesn't know where to go. He doesn't know if he's in the right business. He doesn't know how he got there. The moral dilemma that he's in is one of where do I go from here? Well, you're going to go to this convention now where you're surrounded by all this stuff. And these salesmen, all this new equipment that you see, that you say the scene that's too long, I thought that was just fantastic. Are they instruments of his work or are they tools of his inner destruction? That's what I'm looking at with all this stuff. It's fantastic like that. And there's many things to talk about. For sure, but every piece of this movie did work for me. And I think when you see a movie and all of a sudden a guy you've been watching act for years suddenly becomes this character and you're not going to think of him any other way, that's a great movie. That's one that you need to visit because that's what this did for me. Gene Hackman's Harry Call. I don't think he's ever been better. Coppola's never been better. And I don't know if any film from the 70s ever been better, to be quite honest. That's the way I feel about
it. You should go up to a 10.
Let's wait till the end of the show. Okay. That's it. All right. So
maybe a twist.
Let's get into scenes. Should we stop right here, take a quick break, and listen to a piece of the film, and then get back and punch it out with some scenes? What do you
think?
Sure. Let's do it. Conversation 1974. We'll be back in just a second.
You know, it's really funny. We never bumped into each other in New York, Harry.
Why is that funny?
I don't know. We work in the same business, same city. Figure we bump into each other.
Hey, I didn't know you came from New York, Harry.
Yeah.
Are you kidding? Harry's famous in New York. You know, the only one I couldn't figure out, though, Harry?
When what?
Welfare fund. Back in 68.
How'd you know about that?
Everybody in the biz knew about it. But nobody knows how you did it, though, Harry. How'd you do it, Harry?
Harry? 10 cents a dance. Come on.
Adam, why don't we go over to you? You had a scene you had queued up in your brain a little while ago. You were chewing on. Talk about it. Okay. Going to talk about scenes, things we have to talk about. Go. Kick it off.
Two things really quick to talk about. I think the music was too loud in this movie. And also... Ah,
you and your music.
It was too loud.
Your TV's messed up.
No.
Yes, it is soundtrack.
How about the lens flares? Did they bother you?
Not in this one.
Oh.
And I think it'd be kind of neat to see this remade, honestly. I think it'd be great.
It would be terrible.
It would be awful.
You could use the same actors, even.
I think they have. They probably kind of remade this in different ways.
Yeah. But actually, the scene I want to talk about is the very, very end, after the twist.
Oh, yeah. Love that.
The very end when, you know, he gets the phone call. They should have ended the movie right then and there. It would have made this movie a whole lot better. And then you have an extra 10 minutes of
paranoia,
stupidity,
of him tearing his apartment apart.
Why? You know,
then we wouldn't have our currency.
Yeah.
No,
Yeah,
I mean,
no, I got
if he just quit, I mean, you know, obviously the house is bugged.
No, you don't.
No, you don't.
No, that is what rounds this sucker out, man. Yeah.
How do you know the house is bugged?
He answers the phone and he's like,
Can I say one quick thing and I'm going to shut up?
We can do a whole show on that scene.
Well, we have to talk about it.
Right. We have to.
Do you remember that scene? Well, I'll get off this real quick, but at the end, he's holding that Virgin Mary, that doll.
Yeah.
The little statue.
Didn't want to break it.
He's holding on to his faith.
Sacred.
He's holding on to his faith to the very last end.
Right.
He smashes it. His faith is gone, and there's nothing in there.
Right.
Right? Now, how can you say this movie works without that?
I think it would have been a lot better if it just, he answers the phone, and Harrison Ford says what he says, just stop it right then and there.
Okay. No, and I get that. You want to go out on the suspense end. Yeah, I get it.
What was that sound? If they would have ended the movie right there, okay, was that a real phone call or not?
Yeah, it was a real phone call.
How do you know?
He's paranoid.
He's paranoid. Did he really tear his apartment up? Was the place really bugged?
I'd rather end it there. That's me.
Ah, see.
I'd rather
I had a different take.
That's why there is this thing called subtext. You should really look into that.
But what did matter? Leave it to your own imagination.
That's the whole point of the scene. We don't know if the place was bugged or not. That might not even have been a real phone call because nobody had his phone number.
He was too far gone at that point. And I even wrote down in my notes with the hotel murder scene. I was like, is this his imagination?
That's what I thought too.
Is he just freaking out with the toilet boiling up blood? And I was like, this it seems too almost just fantastic to be actually real and in this world that this movie exists. It just didn't make sense. So I was like, he might be imagining, he might not. And then it leads really nicely into that last scene where it just puts the exclamation point and the question mark on the whole thing.
Okay, and they did have his phone number. He called them from his apartment, remember?
That's right. They had caller ID in 1974.
No, they could have bugged his...
He said he didn't have a phone, too.
All right.
Yeah, he told him he didn't even have a phone.
So for you, Adam, then, you thought it went on a little too long at the end as well. You say it was a little too long in the beginning, things you liked about it. At the end, chop it off with the phone call, and the thing I like best about the film you want to take out. Is that what you're saying?
I think...
Go ahead, Hoodie.
Maybe you should have smashed the saxophone at the end, played the last song on it, and then killed it. Maybe the saxophone is bugged. He's ripped apart everything else.
Except his saxophone and the strap. He's always got the strap around his neck. That's what I was thinking.
First thing I said, he was sitting there playing the saxophone. I was like, he's going to smash that thing, too. He's playing the last song, and then it cuts. I was kind of disappointed that he didn't, like... You know, I mean that you're talking about. He lost his faith. He's lost all of this.
And obviously, that's what the symbolism was for. Am I correct?
Sure. Yeah. But the one thing that he's still holding on to is you know, music equals his humanity. If you want to be like that, you know, that would be the last thing to actually smash and to give up. So to have him pitch it out the window or something would have been him without anything,
within nothing.
Yeah, he'd lost it would have been absent. So if I was going to change something, it would probably be the saxophone.
Interesting.
Just trash it, throw it away,
and then the strap.
What's your favorite scene, Hoodie? What's your favorite scene out of
the opening scene with the music being really strange? I didn't know. Mm-hmm. I really didn't know what was happening. And
the squelching thing.
Just the talking and the interesting sounds. I thought they were just awesome sounds.
Yeah.
And it set up the whole movie because I didn't know why I was looking at these two people and couldn't understand them. And it just the whole thing was just so. Enigmatic.
Very nice.
Enigmatic, yeah.
There it is. Yeah. I knew it was there. But
wrapped in the mystery.
And from there, that's the whole thing. That's the whole movie. And that's my favorite part, was not knowing what was happening, but trying to stay with them and all that, trying to figure it out when there's really just nothing.
When I said it was a step ahead of being the state smarter than me, that's every scene pretty much. And I like that essence of the film. What about you, Savage? What's your favorite scene? What's your favorite part
favorite
of this film?
Favorite scene?
Let's talk about favorites, man.
My favorite scene was him with the girl in the thing at the party where he kind of reveals a little his longing for love. And I really like that tender moment where you really get a glimpse behind the paranoia and the, you know, the secretiveness of him, the secrecy of him. I didn't like the shift in perspective in the last scene. I thought it was a cop-out. I thought this entire movie's been told from Harry Call's scene, except for the reveal where you show what happened during the murder.
Yeah.
And then it's from the omniscient point of view. It's the only scene that's from the omniscient point of view.
And, the opening.
Well, yeah, but that's kind of establishing, you know, but it's still him and it's still his surveillance of
them.
So is
the ending.
No, it's not. Because you see Cindy Williams and, well, you see how, what it went down. It's not what he thought went down. You see the opposite of it. And he had no way to know that. And it's like they had to wrap it up and show you what happened so that they can make sense of the, I guess, the essential or the inevitable blackmail, which I never even considered could have been in his mind.
Yeah. And let's get this straight right now.
You know,
with Cindy Williams and the other guy
and
Harrison Ford, they were all three in on it. One kind of expedited it. The other two were obviously setting him up.
But I thought it was a cop out in sense of perspective.
You attach the perspective too, saying that this is his story. This is seen through his eyes, and then it breaks. I mean, you don't know that for sure.
I thought that from start to finish. I didn't see it break into an omniscient
when the reveal of what happened in the hotel room. He had no way to know that that's what happened. He had no way to see that that's what happened.
Well, they had to show the audience.
That's my point, man, is that it was a cop-out. He should not have known that that's what happened. We should not have seen that that's what happened.
Can I ask you a question about the ending? Did you like it from a I'm-looking-at-this-on-screen aspect? Did you like the way it played out? Was that a big reveal to you that worked? Were you expecting it at all?
No, I thought the twist was good. I thought, from a storytelling point of view, I thought because you're almost conditioned to think, during this whole movie, what's going to happen? So it's kind of predetermined, and that's what he's so paranoid about.
Right.
And then it's like the opposite of that. Mm-hmm. And I like that twist. But as far as a technique, a cinematographic technique, I thought it was a cop-out.
I don't know. It was cool as hell, and I loved it. Well, let's go over to Max Gumbel. Max, go ahead and jump in here. Talk about some scenes that stand out to you.
Okay, well, just not to harp on that, but to harp on it. If they wouldn't have shown that, you wouldn't have known what happened. But here's my point. He was in the hotel room across.
Right.
You know, he was adjacent. He bugged the room.
Yes.
He could hear everything that was going on in there.
Mm-hmm.
He walked out on the patio. He saw the bloody hand come up onto the glass.
Maybe.
Yes. Yeah, we think. I'm tending to think it was real in this case.
See, I never even considered that all of this was in his mind.
Yeah, I didn't either.
Oh, the murder even?
Yeah, no. I didn't consider any of that to be in his mind.
No, only the dream. I thought he had control of his senses.
They've got to show what happened.
There's no point in telling a story that doesn't happen.
That doesn't end.
I mean, that doesn't have
a resolution.
Yeah, that's kind of what I'm saying. What's the point of telling the story if it's not a good story to tell? And I'm the audience. You're the one. You're telling the story to me, by the way. So I'm the guy that needs to know what happened.
But it's a technique thing. I mean, I guess it's from a craft point of view.
Anybody knows craft, it's this guy.
Yeah, no doubt about it.
I'll defer to Coppola on that part.
Max, I want you to talk about a few scenes because you really like this film, and I want to understand the scenes that really grab you. When you close your eyes, you think about this film. Talk about what comes to the surface, and not a blood in the toilet either.
Yeah, not the blood in the toilet, which was that real?
It came to the surface.
I like the party scene.
I did too.
I thought that was a fantastic scene because you got so much information on this guy, and you got to learn so much of his motivation and how he got to be where he is because the guy kept hounding him. How'd you pull that job? He just kept hounding him and beating him and browbeating him through the whole scene.
What a D-bag that dude was.
Oh, yeah, he was a total jerk. But... You could tell this guy was jealous of Harry.
Yes. Oh, yeah.
He was totally jealous. And he's like,
he knew he was number two.
We should be partners, Harry. Yeah. You're the best, but me and you, we'd be tops.
We could top the world. We could rule the world, baby. But you could see it. Yeah. You could see the frustration just building and building and building in this guy. It was almost like he was about to start pounding his fist and start just hollering, damn it, tell me how you did that. And then there was that other shot where Harry's fixing a drink and this guy's standing here and Harry's behind that little
Plastic.
Yeah, the plastic.
Well, that was echoed. That was echoed through the whole movie. There was always something in the foreground that was blurry, that was obstructing us, put between us and Harry.
Mm-hmm.
And if there wasn't anything between us, then he was shot at a really long distance.
And that's
the distance that he's put between himself
and everybody else.
Right.
The scene when he gets home and finds the bottle of wine and he picks up his phone and he immediately just sits there on the sofa and starts undressing.
Taking off his socks.
Taking off his pants. And he folds them real nicely and puts them on the side.
Yeah. Mr. Rogers moment.
And you're sitting, you don't realize.
You would know about that, wouldn't you? Yeah.
You don't realize this till maybe later in the movie. That's how paranoid this guy is. He wants to get his clothes off and get them farthest away from him.
You know what?
Because he thinks they might have picked something up.
I picked up on the same thing.
I do that every day. But I had a problem with that scene.
Because anybody who's ever worn a tie all day in their life knows that that's the first thing that comes off of you. That comes off of you in the car.
Hey, can I talk about that party scene real quick? Because I told you earlier I had some takes on it. And you know what I thought about that? That scene's relevant because it shows how far Harry has removed himself from the others. He can't go out there and have a good time. Like, the ones are riding this scooter around. It's free. It's liberating.
Yeah.
They can put their work down. If you look at that scene, there's one little part of that party scene that I really like. They're out there having a good time, driving around on the scooter. They aren't these guys anymore. They're just having a good time.
Yeah.
Harry's in his little studio, or whatever you want to call it, and he looks up at this thing dangling in front of him, like a little, mobile kind of thing. You know?
Mm-hmm. Yeah.
And he simply gets a smile on his face, and he blows it. That's as much as he can go as far as cutting loose.
But he still had the, you'd have to use, this many guys. You'd have to do, four passes. I did it in three.
Yeah.
And he comes
there was
out
pride.
His chest buffed up. But but you could tell that he was really enjoying his work, too.
Yeah.
So this is, like you're saying, totally invested, but he still loves his job.
But I think that scene was very good because it showed that he wasn't like the others. This is not just part of the job. This is part of Harry's soul. And then it goes into that scene you do like.
Mm-hmm.
Which is that dream sequence where it's like, how did he get here? Who is this guy? You have to find out something about his roots, where he came from, his foundation. You find out that he was sick as a boy. He couldn't believe he lived. Remember, he was sick. And all he remembers is waking up and feeling the holy oil drenched on his body. And he thought he was dead, but he was just drenched in holy oil. And that feeds into the idea that religion has been stuck to this guy from the time he was a boy. He says he punched a guy one time and he died. Because of it, and he tells Cindy Williams in his dream, I'm not afraid of dying, but I'm afraid of murder.
Yeah.
This guy is terrified of what he is morally. And at the end, he had to be stuck in that web. And that's why that ending part is so powerful.
That goes back to the party scene where they reveal that he's so scared of these people getting killed because of what had happened on that other bugging job where they ended up getting killed.
Yeah,
he thought he was responsible for it. So he's a devout Catholic. So it plays into that whole Catholic guilt thing through the whole movie. And like when they're sitting in the shop and he says, Jesus Christ, Harry, and he says, don't say that, it offends me.
Oh, he didn't like that.
And when you're saying he enjoyed that party where he gets to talking about his work, to me that says that's all he's got is his work.
Yeah.
This is all this guy's got to talk about.
Yeah, but there's a little hubris about it. I mean, he was
Well, yeah, because he's the best.
But this guy's life sucks, man. Nothing is what it is.
No,
I mean, his faith is not what he thought it was. The girl in the bed next to him wasn't what he thought she was. His job's not what he thought it was. You know what we need to do? We need to wrap it up. Any final words before we get into our top three paranoid characters?
This movie's a 10 all the way.
You know what?
The roof.
You know what? I'm going to 10.
Thank you.
I can't shake this film. All right.
Thanks for going up on that.
Yeah.
Appreciate that.
So what's the score? What's the score?
I want to.
Go to an 8.
Yeah.
I will someday.
Producer, never mind. Let's talk about our top three paranoid characters. There's been a few, hasn't there? Huh? Paranoid characters.
A lot. It's been a couple.
Let's go over to the most paranoid member of the Q Film Cast.
Adam?
To start it off. You want to go to Adam? No, I'm going to you, Max Gumbo Johnson.
Paranoid?
I'm not bucking tradition.
What are you guys talking about me for?
Why don't you lead it off, Gumbo? Top three paranoid characters inspired by the film.
I should tell you.
The conversation. What's your number three?
Number three is Walter Sobchak, Big Lebowski.
Oh, ooh, yeah. 2 weeks in a row.
All right.
He's got to be in there.
That's amazing.
Is it the cross the line Donnie scene? Or
oh, it's everything. It's the beating up the Corvette. It's the crossing the line. Am I the only one that follows the rules?
Yeah.
Everything. You name it.
Walter Sobchak, great Lebowski. Big Lebowski, number three.
The Great Big Lebowski.
Great Big Lebowski.
The Great Big Lebowski.
That's the sequel.
There's a sequel coming. Greatest producer in the history of the Q Film Cast. What's your number three?
None of y'all will get this, but maybe Max will. Bill from Society.
Nope.
No.
Nope. Sorry.
Really?
Moving along.
Nobody?
Nope.
Never heard of it.
Should we elaborate or move on?
You, sir, are Buddy Holly, and we are the Crickets.
Yeah.
What is Society?
Society, the Charles Band, I don't think it was Charles Band, Full Moon movie.
Oh, I didn't get to see it because y'all drug me to that funky-ass Halloween party, and I didn't get to go to the theater at the Belcourt and watch it.
Whoa.
You're right.
Animosity.
Yeah. He was paranoid.
Matthew St. Hoodie, the patron saint, number three.
I had a really hard time with this list. I couldn't tell if it was paranoid, if it actually happened to you. Are you still paranoid, or is that conspiracy theories? Anyway, Mel Brooks, High Anxiety.
Oh, wow.
Yeah.
That's it.
Yeah, I thought about that.
High Anxiety.
I need to rewatch that. It's been a while.
I've forgotten about that.
It's on Netflix.
Good one. It is. Really? I saw that last night. Mm-hmm. I mean, I didn't watch it, but I saw it.
How's that rank as far as Mel Brooks films to you?
One of his better ones, I think.
Really?
One of his...
Yeah, yeah, I had to like scroll through real quick.
There's no Dracula Dead Love in it.
Oh, God.
I'm kidding.
How about you, Savage? How about you?
I'll lift a character from this film and another Coppola film, Frederick Forrest from Apocalypse Now, Chef.
Oh, yeah, no
he
doubt.
He was freaked out.
That's the second time you've picked him, too.
No, I picked Apocalypse Now.
Oh, you
pick him.
All right.
I like the tie-in, though.
Yeah.
Any way you can thread that together with the film we're talking about, that's fantastic. Yeah. Frederick Forrest.
Better Coppola film.
You think so? Yeah. Oh, obviously you think so.
Yeah. No.
That'd be a tough call.
That's why you're wrong.
I'm going to be on the Max train tonight.
All right.
I like where Max is taking me.
All right.
Thank you. Number three for me, I'm going to go with George Clooney in Burn After Reading.
He was
paranoid.
He was outdoor.
He could build a hell of a chair, couldn't he?
Whoa. Let's not talk about that chair.
Is that a chair you would sit in, Max?
No. I think that's a chair you would like to make someone sit in.
No. Right? Well, I wouldn't sit in it.
No, I said make someone sit in.
Oh, my.
Never saw
it. You've never seen Burn After Reading?
Never saw it.
It's fantastic.
Why did I like it more than everybody else? I loved it.
I just said it's fantastic.
So. Well, Hoodie and I, you know what?
I liked it.
I loved it. I own it.
Okay, let's go.
Number two for Max Gumbo Johnson. Number two, paranoid characters inspired by the film The Conversation.
Catherine Deneuve in Repulsion, the Roman Polanski film.
Never have seen this.
She's a tenant in this apartment, and she just goes incredibly insane and crazy, and she thinks everybody's out to get. It's the most horrifying thing I've ever seen.
Really?
Well, not really, but it's pretty. It's pretty. It's out there. It's wild.
Hmm. Mr. Producer, we're up to number two. Do you want to jump in? What you got?
Yeah, Charlie from Fright Night.
Yeah, he was pretty paranoid.
Yeah,
I think he's paranoid.
He was paranoid, but with reason.
Yeah. Well, vampires wanted to chew on you. Well, wouldn't you be
or
paranoid?
His mama.
Matthew St. Hoodie, the patron saint of quality outerwear. Number two for you, Matt. What you got, Hoodie?
I suck at this list.
Yeah.
Yeah.
Well, number two.
I got to say, conspiracy theory, Mel Gibson. I hate that I'm that guy, but you can't.
I love that movie, though.
It's
And I thought the film was great. I really liked the movie a lot.
Yeah. Yep.
Somebody had to say him.
It's the obvious one.
Well, it was built on his obviously rub-it-in-your-face paranoia, so yeah.
Julie Robinson.
Did you like the movie, though?
Yeah, I liked it.
Yeah, that was
really like Catcher in the Rye. Big fan.
Okay.
I bought like 40 copies.
I'm going to remember that next time I go to your house.
Inspired by the film we talked about, Conversation 1974, James Hardsub Savage, number two.
I got a twofer for my number two. Dave and Hal from 2001. They were paranoid about each other.
Is this cue approved?
Yeah,
yeah, I'd say so.
Okay.
Yeah, that passes muster.
Yeah.
Can a robot be paranoid?
Yeah, he can.
How
he was
can.
Paranoid.
Was he a robot then?
Good answer, actually. That was good answer.
Yeah. He was intelligent.
Yeah.
Nicely done.
Dave.
What are you doing, Dave? What are you doing, Dave? You know what my number two is? My number two is Alan Bernstein from Requiem for a Dream.
Oh, good answer, sir. Good answer. Yeah.
That's just out of your mind, old lady paranoid. Old lady paranoid is a different kind of paranoid.
Is that the worst kind of paranoia?
I think it is.
Was that medically induced paranoia?
Yeah, kind of.
Yeah, I think she was kind of chemically. High most of the time, wasn't she?
Oh, she was paranoid, man.
She was just tripping.
What are we down to, number ones?
Number one.
Oh, God, my goodness. Max Gumbo Johnson, number one paranoid movie character.
Well, if he gets a twofer, I get a twofer because I could not decide on number one for these. And ironically, they're both played by the same guy. It's a tie for number one. It's Queeg from The Caine Mutiny and Fred Dobbs from Treasure on the Sierra Madre, both played by Humphrey Bogart.
Going old school.
Old school. That's what
have
he does.
Has anybody seen either of these movies?
Nope.
Nope.
Which one's better?
Now, if I had to pick one that was better, Treasure Sierra Madre.
Yeah, you gave
me
one
of my favorite movies of all time.
You gave me a stupid movie one night, and I couldn't play it.
So how do you know it's a stupid movie?
Because I don't have I couldn't play it in my DVD player.
Because you don't
have a
Blu-ray
player. Betamax, right?
It's only at 100% on Rotten Tomatoes. Yeah, that's a stupid movie.
No, I didn't say it was stupid. It was stupid. I couldn't watch it, Max.
Moving on.
Could be paranoid.
moving on now.
Producer number one, paranoid movie characters.
Natalie Portman in Black Swan.
Love that answer.
Well played, sir.
That's a good one. She was crazy.
Did you like the film, Savage?
Oh, yeah, absolutely.
I think that's my favorite Aronofsky film.
I haven't seen Noah, so I'll reserve
Don't worry about it.
I can't imagine it's better than Black Swan.
No.
Noah had
Requiem's still my favorite.
Noah's not.
Requiem's good, man, but it's a hard watch.
It's no Black Swan.
No, Black Swan's the best, I think, of the bunch. Let's go to the best of the bunch here, and that's Matthew St. Hoodie. Do you like that? I'm setting you up night and day.
We should do this all the time. Everybody.
Number one, buddy. What is it?
You're the best.
Winston Smith, 1984.
Oh, yeah.
Oh,
that's
man.
That's why I was asking.
That's a good answer. Yeah. Good answer.
Somebody had to say it.
Yeah. It's always me.
It's always you.
Somebody had to say it.
I need to watch that film again. Talk about a dated film.
Yeah, that's real dated. The
book's from 1984.
Better, obviously.
And who played
they
that part?
They were so wrong.
I knew you'd ask
so John Hurt.
John Hurt. That's who it was. John Hurt. John Hurt. That's right.
He's the only person I remember in that movie.
Well, hurt me with your number one, Sir Savage. What is it?
All right, I'm going to go off the rails a little bit here. Conspiracy Brother, Dave Chappelle from Undercover Brother.
Ooh!
Conspiracy Brother.
Conspiracy Brother.
Right?
I like it.
Yeah. Conspiracy Brother.
All right, nice, man.
Just the name.
Conspiracy Brother. You know what I'm doing?
Uh-oh.
I thought, should I do this?
Sure.
I thought, should I not do it? You know, I became a little paranoid, actually, on whether or not I should do this or not. And I thought the fact that it makes me paranoid makes it appropriate. And I'm going to double down on the same answer I had last week, and that is Michael Shannon in Take Shelter.
Do you think it's more than Bug? Michael
yep.
Shannon in Bug.
Because I love that movie so much. Yeah, well, they're both equally... Well, yeah. You know what? The hell with it. I'm changing over to Bug. Because when you set yourself on fire... Right. Have you seen this film?
Nope.
Oh my God.
Bug is... Whoa. That's a hard watch.
You didn't like that film, did you?
I was not crazy about Bug. No.
Well, you were set up to fail because you thought it was like The Exorcist. You told me.
I was set up to fail because they told me it was the scariest film Friedkin had made since The Exorcist. Yeah. I was like, oh, this is going to be awesome. And I'm like, this isn't scary at all.
You know what it is? It's a Friedkin good movie is what it is.
Yeah.
I'd rather watch Sorcerer again.
But you got to admit, he was paranoid. That's a paranoid man.
They were both paranoid.
Hoodie, yeah. I would love to hear Hoodie's take on this.
Yeah. Maybe I'll have to watch it again. I'll have to watch it again.
That's it.
No, what did the people on Twitter say?
Oh, the Twitter shout-outs.
Twitter
Savage.
Top three.
Yeah, let's talk about Twitter shout-outs. I put this out there. James Gardiner at Keltar93 at the GM Conachie, Conachie. And Andrew Collingwood at Firewalk with Me, MOI, all said Gene Hackman in the conversation. How about Jesse at Jurassic Griffin? Jim Carrey in the number 23. Ooh, that makes me give an honorable shout out to...
Terrible movie, but he was paranoid.
Kevin Bacon in Stir of Echoes. That was paranoia.
Never saw it.
Oh, good movie. Have you seen
great
this?
Great movie.
I liked it. That movie.
Kevin Creighton at KJ Creighton says Sean Vale, played by Lee Evans in Freeze Frame.
Any
idea?
That
didn't say it.
No idea.
Hey, good on you, man. You gave us a film we have no idea about. Makes me want to watch it, though. Mike Kuhn, KUHN at DIF Movie Reviews, said John Malkovich in Red.
Yep.
Yeah, he was paranoid.
How about Samuel Faulkner at Samuel M. Faulkner? He says The Caveman's Valentine.
I know the movie. I've never seen it.
I looked at it, though. I looked it up on IMDb. Samuel L. Jackson is the paranoid one.
Yeah, that one.
Jamin Discovery at Jamin DISC. Also said Harry Call, but he also said arguably reborn as Edward Lyle, an enemy of the state.
He wouldn't use his real name.
Yeah. So there you go. A lot of Twitter shout-outs.
I'm
shocked
no one mentioned Rosemary from Rosemary's Baby.
Good point. Well, that wraps it up, guys. There it is. Conversation 1974. And also our top three paranoid movie characters. That's what it was. You know what that brings it up to? Our big reveal next week's show.
Yeah.
You know whose turn it is. Yeah. Matthew St. Hoodie, the patron saint of quality outerwear. Why don't you go ahead and reveal that? Let's talk about what we're going to do next week, the film, and
Buck.
Are you darn tooting? It's Buck? Are you talking about the cowboy film?
Yeah, Buck. What's Buck?
Okay, Buck.
Right. Buck, what is his last name? Branahan?
Buck Branahan. You're talking about the 2011 documentary about the...
Wow, look at you go. I don't know the years, but yeah.
I got it down.
That's awesome. What's a documentary?
Yeah, of course. Well, you had to throw in documentary
Adam,
once in a while.
Adam, it has horses.
Yeah.
Okay. Cowboys.
Like saddles.
Roping.
Chaps. Now, have you seen this film yet?
Oh, yeah. Many times. Okay. I like it a lot.
Well, I've been really wanting to see this. This is one I've had in my queue for a while. It's one that, for some reason, we were going to go to the Belcourt, the great Belcourt in Nashville, and see it. Something happened. Family dinner. Couldn't make it.
Yeah.
So I've wanted to see it for a long time. Thank you very much.
You are welcome.
Kind of like this one.
Especially Adam. I think Adam's really going to take to this one.
Is he going to come in here with a cowboy hat, chaps, and spurs? And Adam, I want you dressed like a cowboy next week.
Well,
you better come in
Nashville
here with your hat on.
Equipment.
Okay.
And not a Village People cowboy.
So that's next week. Buck, 2011. Looking forward to it. And why don't you do the same thing as well, audience? You go out there and watch the film. Come back. See if you agree with our take on it. And that is next week. Buck, 2011. We're going to cue it. We're going to review it. And we'll see you next week. And however it is, you say good night.